We are in the second week of our current message series in the midst of a confusing, sometimes frightening pandemic, the ongoing threat of civil unrest, and a disquieting presidential election cycle, all of which has deeply divided our nation, our community, and even often our own families. What do we say in the face of it all? That's a question that we have considered very carefully here at Nativity. What do we say in the face of it all this season? I do not believe the church should stay silent entirely when it comes to political issues and matters of public policy. The church has something to say about public affairs and needs a clear voice. The church has a prophetic role in society, I think. But as pastor, I'm not interested in speaking about politics here at my church. Some pastors feel differently. Some pastors do. They use their pulpit to preach politics. Just this past week, I don't know if you caught this in the news, a neighboring pastor at a Catholic church here in North Baltimore delivered himself of a barn-burning sermon all about current events. He later posted it on YouTube, and to date, he's gotten 1.9 million views. That is what you would call making a statement. I thoroughly respect his position and his choice in the matter. It's his pulpit, it's his church, and I respect that. But it is not my choice in my church. I don't want to talk about politics because I know politics divides. It's the very nature of politics to divide. And I don't want a divided parish. Besides, Jesus didn't talk about politics. And the political culture and environment of his day was a lot more hostile toward Christianity than it is in our day. He resisted every effort to allow his kingdom to become a political movement. When the crowds wanted to make him king, he walked away. And over again, even his apostles misunderstood his intentions when it came to worldly position and power. And over again, he had to correct and redirect them that his kingdom was different. He threaded the needle when it came to religion and politics. He said, pay your taxes and give your heart to God. The early Christians did the same. Paul said very little about politics. The consistent advice that he gave to Christians was obey the law, pay your taxes, fulfill your civic responsibilities, and love the Lord. Otherwise, he never addresses the political issues of his day, and it was the same for Peter and James and John. So, I'm not talking about politics at church, now or ever. And yet, I feel compelled to acknowledge the upcoming election. Because it looms so large in our daily experience, doesn't it? You all know this. I had lunch with a friend on Thursday, and knowing his political views ahead of time, I determined that I would do everything I could to steer the conversation away from the election. And I succeeded until just about the very end of the meal when he said, so are you going to watch the debates tonight? And we were off and running. And I'm happy to report we're still friends, even though he's wrong about everything. I need to acknowledge the upcoming election because it looms so large in our daily experience, and to ignore it would risk irrelevance. And that is the very last thing this church should ever be for you, irrelevant. And I know that we don't always get this right as parish leadership, but our goal, our intention, is to be a place that speaks into your daily life, that helps you see the current culture, the current events in the context of God's Word. Our goal is to inspire, encourage, and equip you to shape your heart and challenge your thinking. Our goal is not to tell you what to think or how to vote, but to provide leadership to help you form your thinking and make your choices. While Jesus and the early church leaders didn't address politics, they found a way. They found a way to build a movement that unified people of different parties and persuasions. And that's what I want for us. That's what I want for our parish, to be a movement that unites people of different parties and persuasions. If you're looking for a parish where everyone agrees with you politically, then I think you could be missing out on part of the point of being a church community. And you could be missing out on an unprecedented opportunity that we have as a parish at this time, at least I think so. Because we can be a model for our community, we can be a model for other churches, as we so often are, of what it looks like to disagree politically and still be united behind something much larger, much more important than who will be the next president. Today, we're going to look at how we are united in our common mission. How we are united in our common mission. Our mission is our why. It's our purpose. It's our reason for existing. When a company, a community, a church, a club, a country, whatever, is clear on why it exists, it's going to be more effective, it's going to be more productive, more positive, more successful. On the other hand, when you lose your why, you lose your way. When you don't know your purpose or you've forgotten your purpose, it leads to conflict, infighting, lack of productivity, and lots of other bad stuff too. As a parish, it's critically important that we remember the mission that unites us. We receive it from our founder himself. It's simple as can be and crystal clear. And it can be found, among other places, in the 22nd chapter of Matthew's Gospel. The scene takes place at the temple courts in Jerusalem, just days before Jesus would die. And at this point, Jesus' adversaries are consumed with jealousy because of his power and his popularity. They're trying to discredit him, to build a case against him, so that they could have him arrested and imprisoned, or better yet, executed, which of course is exactly what happened. There were basically three different groups of Jewish leaders at this time, and they were all adversaries. They all hated each other, but they hated Jesus more. So they're willing to work together just this once, taking turns to try and discredit him. They lay traps for him in terms of arguments, political arguments, and political arguments dressed up as theological arguments. And he easily and brilliantly responds to all their arguments and leaves his adversaries, his initial adversaries, speechless. So a third group steps up to the plate with their own argument that's a little trickier. It's raised by fellows called the Pharisees. We've met them before. These are the scholars of the land, and they're also pretty slick, too. And here's what happened. When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a scholar of the law, tested him by asking, "Teacher, which commandment is the greatest?" So the Pharisees were teachers of the law. It's the law of Moses that we find in the first five books of the Old Testament. It's called the Torah. They believed that a strict adherence to those laws is what makes us right before God. The Pharisees didn't so much respect the law as they were obsessed by it. They were lost in the law. And in the process, they missed out on the purpose and point of it all. In that sense, they were exhibit number one in losing your why. So the Pharisees hear that Jesus has silenced his other adversaries. So they step up to the plate to see if they can trap Jesus, and they're going to do it on what they know best, the law. There were 613 commandments in the law. It was a matter of constant and often bitter contention, which were the most important ones. So this question is a trick question. It's meant to start a fight, which is exactly what they wanted. They didn't get it. He said to them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment." That's actually a prayer that would have been prayed by pious Jews every single day. It's taken from Scripture, from Deuteronomy 6:4. So that answer in itself would not have been a very controversial answer, except it was only half of his answer. He's not finished. He goes on. He goes on to completely baffle and befuddle them. Take a look. The second is like it. "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." The whole law and the prophets depend upon these commandments. Worship of God and love of neighbor go together. That was news to these guys, but it shouldn't have been. Judaism, as it was intended, is intrinsically linking love of God and love of neighbor. And that was a new idea in all of human history. The pagan gods didn't care how you treated people. In fact, they often called for the mistreatment of people, where people were objects of sexual exploitation, slave servitude, even human sacrifice. Love of God and love of neighbor go together. But the Pharisees lost sight of that in the deep weeds of their legalism and religious law-keeping. Love of God and love of neighbor go together, and all the other laws are only subsequent to that law. All the other laws are only in service to that law. All the other laws make no difference if you lose sight of that law. And with that, Jesus silenced the Pharisees. This is the original drop the mic moment. Our mission as a church is simple as can be. It's living out what has been called the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. What's that? Well, it's just the three basic things Jesus told us to do over and over again. Love God, love others, make disciples. When we talk about missions and ministry here at Nativity, which we do all the time, we're actually talking about that second one, love others. Our mission is to grow in our love for others. Our small groups, our member care, our healing ministry, our prayer ministry, our grief ministry are all practical ways in which we do that here inside our church community. Our missions are the practical ways we do that outside our church. To love the people in our community, our city, our country, and the larger world. To love people, especially those who are under-resourced. Since our international missions are presently on hold, our current priority is our own city of Baltimore. We have several organizations that we partner with: Catholic Charities, My Sister's Place, Baltimore Station, Aramenta, Helping Up Mission. Through this COVID crisis, we have continued to support our partners so that they can continue to provide meals and other resources to their clients. Southwest Partnership is another one of our partners. We're currently working with them, as you probably know, to rebuild the Poppleton Recreation Center in the Poppleton neighborhood of West Baltimore. While the project has been slowed down by the pandemic, as you can imagine, we're starting to see some momentum on it again this fall. We're hoping to host an Advent giving program in December in conjunction with the center. That will be the weekend of December 12th and 13th. And we'll be providing more details about that in coming weeks. And we're still hoping to have opportunities to serve at the center in the spring and summer of 2021. Meanwhile, we've got lots of other projects going on too all the time. For instance, on Saturday, November 7th, we're joining a community-based project to clean up, brighten up, and freshen up the Stuart Hill Elementary School in that same neighborhood. This is a big part of our approach to missions. We're not just about doing good deeds or being good deed doers. We're about building healthy relationships, trying to grow in our love for people by getting to know them, standing with them, working with them, caring about what they care about, being for them as God is for us. If you'd like to learn more or sign up to serve, check out our mission website. I encourage you to do so. It's at churchnativity.com/missions. Take a look. I think you'll be impressed by the breadth of our service projects. Does it really matter who wins the election? Does it really matter who's president? Of course it matters. But long after this 2020 election cycle is over, and long after that too, God is still God. God is still God, and he calls us to love him by loving one another. Political power lasts for whatever season it spans, but it's always and only a blink of the eye in the light of eternity. God and God alone is the one who will reign forever. Your chosen candidates may have your vote, but not one of them has died for you. The God who did that forever calls us to unite behind him and what he is doing in the world. So, as we work through this series, I again invite you to renewed efforts in prayer. Prayer for unity, our unity. Pray for the unity of our parish families. Pray for the unity of our parish family. Pray for unity in our community and in our country. Last week, I announced that we were going to dedicate a whole day of prayer for unity and peace. We're calling it United in Prayer. We've decided that it will be Tuesday, November 3rd. The church will be open all day long on that day for private prayer and Eucharistic adoration from 7 in the morning to 7 in the evening, coinciding with the polls. The day will begin and end with rosary and mass. You can sign up in advance, or you can just show up. No reservation needed. All safety procedures and precautions will certainly be in place. Join us for prayer on Election Day. On the night before he died, his very last prayer at the Last Supper, very last prayer for his friends and followers ever, was simply this prayer. May they be one. May they be one so the world will know you sent me. That's it. The world will know the truth that is Christ, the love that is God, based solely and entirely on our unity and charity.